Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why?
Yeah.
Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
That I do recommend. Good evening, afternoon, whenever you happen to be listening, and welcome to The Reaction, a presentation of the Tony's Driving Radio Network. What are you doing
living
over
my
there,
life,
Tony?
Man. I'm just living my life.
Apparently, Tony's either driving or making photocopies in the background. I'm not sure which.
Sounds like driving.
But anywho, what's up, man?
What's up?
And not much over here. You know how it is. Just a standard mid-March Monday.
In the OHIO is apparently how I'm supposed to say it, according to the owner of the bar that I run.
Yeah, most self-respecting Ohioans don't care about that.
Thank God.
And unless they're like those Ohio State marks.
That's definitely what he is.
Yeah. Yeah, they try that stuff with me. They hit me with the OH. I hit them with a fuck off.
Yeah.
Don't worry, the
noise in the background is temporary. I just had very little time to make myself a nice pastrami sandwich before the show.
So that was a microwave I was hearing.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
This deli in a neighboring city that I found with quite possibly the best sandwich, the best pastrami sandwich I have found, and I've been on the hunt for a while. So I bought myself two of them, knowing that I would eat the second one tonight. However, the bread got pretty soggy, so I basically deconstructed it and then reconstructed it with some nice sourdough.
Your dietary options sound fantastic, Tony. I had leftover rigatoni and meatballs from the Bellaria Italian restaurant up the street from me. It was pretty solid.
I mean, that sounds pretty good, too.
I can't complain about rigatoni and meatballs, man. I may be British, but my family loves them some Italian food.
Well, welcome to Harry and Tony's Kitchen, everyone.
It's almost like Jimmy C's back with us.
Man,
the
that
world.
Guy.
Oh, speaking of which, I hosted a football podcast with him last night.
Nice.
Or,
is he still
me,
his
not a football, self? Not a football podcast, a basketball podcast. We did a March Madness preview. Honestly,
nice.
he was not ornery at all. I think having children has kind of mellowed him.
Well, I mean, either that or he just stopped watching Raw. That'll also do it.
Actually, I think it's more that than the other one. Yeah, you actually have a valid point there. But you know what I did watch this week? I watched SmackDown. Segway! Did you actually get a chance to... Okay, again, bar speaking here. How much of SmackDown did you actually get to watch?
As per usual, if given the time, I first watched every Sasha Banks segment, and then hope that I have time for the rest. So this particular week, I got nothing. I read it, of course.
All right, well, we'll start with the Sasha Banks segment then, because that actually was one of the things that I did plan on discussing here. As Sasha and Bianca face a speed bump on the road to Fastlane on their road to WrestleMania, as they take on Tamina and Natalya, and apparently somebody thought it would be a good idea for Tamina to pin Bianca Belair. I'm not sure who that somebody is, but they should be fired immediately.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the Tamina repush, which came out of nowhere. No one cares about. No one is latching on to. It doesn't do anything. At the very least, she's another body. But the thing is, they've got plenty of other bodies to kind of take that role.
For example, you know who would make perfect sense to team with Natalya feeling underappreciated on SmackDown right now? Carmella. Because Carmella has all but disappeared ever since Reginald decided he had a crush on Sasha Banks.
and then Nia. Oh.
Yeah, we're not going to get into that. We don't talk about Nia on this show, remember? Unless it's absolutely necessary with her being involved in a match. And she was not in a match. Unfortunately, she is in a match this week on SmackDown, and we'll get to that next week here on the show. Tony, I'm looking for your Raw report, and apparently I'm looking for your Raw report, and apparently it's not posted yet.
Yeah, it's there. It's
I found it. Go ahead, continue.
Tamina's similar to Nia in a lot of ways, where I haven't seen any significant growth ever. So it just boggles my mind that, you know, not that I don't want anyone to lose their job, but like I just don't.
To be fair to Tamina, though, at least she's not actively hurting people.
Well, that's true.
It's a low bar to clear, but she does. So they're once again running the tag team title match that they ran at Elimination Chamber at Fastlane as they might get added to the match after their win this past Friday on SmackDown, but currently it's set up that Sasha and Bianca challenge Nia and Shayna. I mean, the only point of this match is for Sasha to lay in a beatdown, right?
Something like that. I don't know. Just this is one of those things where they made it, and now they're trying to figure out what story to tell as opposed to the other way around. And when that happens, you get what we've got over the past several weeks.
I'm drinking a Coca-Cola here, and it's making me a little burpy. So if I go mute for a few seconds, it's because I dropped my microphone so I don't burp in your ear.
Yeah, of course.
All right, so the other thing that I thought was pretty interesting, and this was actually interesting on this show because that's all the time that I want to give that match that we just discussed. Honestly, the 3 minutes we just talked about it is about as long as the match went on SmackDown. So the main event segment for SmackDown was the contract signing between Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan at Fastlane, and they're seemingly going with the angle that Bryan is playing Roman Reigns like a fiddle, because originally Reigns was going to refuse to sign the contract for the match at Fastlane, and then says that the reason Bryan tells Roman that the reason that he doesn't want to sign the contract is because last week he did something that Roman couldn't do for 4 months, and that was make Jey Uso say "I quit" when he tapped Jey Uso out with the LaBelle walk inside of the cage match. I thought that was a nice little detail from Bryan there.
Yeah. I mean, if the rumors are true, Bryan's been helping out a lot with regards to the storyline, the storytelling. And it's funny because it shows, and it's not like, oh my God, this is so much better. This is just a crazy, like, I've never seen writing this good. But it all makes sense. You're like, oh, this makes sense. And it's a little callbacks that you can kind of relate to because you remember seeing that, you remember watching. And it's its own nice little package, you know. SmackDown, I feel more often than not, is just this little gift to us, you know, where, yeah, of course, they're going to have – because it's made by WWE, there's going to be moments where it's like, ugh. But the fact that it's 2 hours, the fact that it has a strong roster, the fact that it has a direction and your characters have clearly defined roles and motivation, it just makes everything so much better.
So Reigns signs, and Bryan promises to make Reigns tap too. That leads to Jey Uso getting in Bryan's face, saying that he's going to be the special enforcer for the match at Fastlane, which they're telegraphing a clusterfuck finish a mile away with this one. Adam Pearce is apparently considering it when Edge's music interrupts, and Edge throws out the idea that he'll face Jey Uso on SmackDown next week, and the winner of that match will be the guest enforcer for the match at Fastlane, which telegraphs even more clusterfuckery. Two-part question for you, Tony. One, do you think it's wise to give Edge's first singles match back away on free television?
Yeah, this goes in line with what you, were kind of bothered by with regards to Edge, where, you know, you see him as a part-timer, and I think in his mind, he sees himself as a active member of the current roster. And because of that, this shouldn't be some type of like, you're only good enough for a singles match at a pay-per-view, or you're only deserving of the greatest match ever. No, you're a part of the roster. You're a part of this story. Let's do it. And I don't think people are clamoring for that singles match per se. So I think it's one of those things where if he's a part of the roster, let's make him a part of the roster.
Brian and Edge get into a brawl with Roman and Jay, pairing off with Brian with Reigns and Edge with Jay. Eventually, Jay gets sent out of the ring, and Brian goes over to go after Reigns himself. Or, excuse me, Edge comes over to go after Reigns himself, pushing Brian away. Brian doesn't appreciate this and ends up laying out Edge with the knee plus to end the show. The leaping knee strike that he uses. Formerly the B plus knee, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right, so here's my second question in this situation here. They almost have to deliver Edge versus Brian in a singles match with the way that they've been building to it, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think it's something that both of those men and the audience want.
All right, that leads to the second part of that question. Do you think we see the WrestleMania main event turning into a triple threat between Edge, Brian, and Roman after Edge causes the clusterfuckery of sorts at Fastlane?
Well, I have mixed feelings about that. A large part of me wants to see it happen. Sorry, I'm mid-chew. I forgot where I was going with it. So basically, the good news is I want to see that, right?
The dangers of eating on the show, folks.
Yeah, guys, don't ever do this. Don't be like me. Be professional. Eat before or after, or, you know, whatever. Anyways.
Have the decency to mute your mic while you're eating.
When you consider the idea of Daniel versus Edge, you're, like, foaming at the mouth. Daniel Bryan versus Roman Reigns, foaming at the mouth. Unless you're, like, an avid lover of triple threat matches, one may assume that having a triple threat diminishes the possibility of either one of these single matches being, like, you know, a five-star classic or whatever. But when you look at the players involved, I don't know. I think we're in for a treat no matter which one we get, and that's good news.
Well, you're of the opinion that Edge is walking out of WrestleMania with the title. You've mentioned this before.
Correct.
Do you think that this potentially sets up, since if he screws Brian at Fastlane, do you think this potentially sets up Brian as his first challenger, say at a Extreme Rules or a Backlash pay-per-view come April/May?
Well, I mean, isn't Backlash the pay-per-view of rematches? So, but yeah, if we're setting up a challenger after Roman Reigns, that makes the assumption that they're not going to have Reigns at the top of the card. I think it's Brian that's going to scale down, and, you know, we're going to get a lengthy Edge versus Reigns storyline. But, again, when all three of these guys are firing on all cylinders, it really doesn't matter. They can all three be at the top for a while. You know, they could carry the blue brand for a long time. Or either one of them can transition to a different story. Or, I mean, you know, like, we still got one Uso that hasn't been around for a while. That adds another fold to it. Like, there's plenty of potential there, and that's why I enjoy it so much when I can watch it, is because it's like every week you get just a little bit more added to something, but you're able to expand the width and length of this story and or stories. So I'm all for it. I don't know. I'm really enjoying all the work that Reigns has done over the past year. I like Daniel putting himself into it in a natural way as opposed to a shoehorned way, kind of like tonight with AJ and Omos. So I'm game. Let's do it. Entertain me, Blue Brand.
All right, you can take a bite of your pastrami because I'm going to have a few thoughts here myself. With regards to the Brian and Edge thing, I think at this point you have to deliver Edge and Brian in a one-on-one match. The problem is I don't think that's a match you give away on television. I think that that's a match that you use to send people to Peacock. Because I think giving away a match of that caliber on free TV, specifically free TV since it's Fox, would be a mistake because that's a match that would draw subscriptions to the network, I think. With that being said, I kind of agree with you out of the three that Brian's probably the one that gets scaled back down into the mid-card after his involvement here, and that he's realistically just here to give Roman something to do in the interim of the fact that they put a pay-per-view in between Elimination Chamber and Fastlane, or between Elimination Chamber and Royal Rumble. WrestleMania, between Elimination Chamber and WrestleMania, and had no real need to do so. I do think that Bryan could definitely help carry the top of the card on SmackDown, but I think Bryan's better utilized in a role where he was previously on SmackDown, where he was kind of that gatekeeper for the next superstar on the blue brand, where he was the one that was having those Intercontinental Championship matches against people, where he was the tone for Sami Zayn for his Intercontinental Championship run back when Sami won it in February of last year and then retained it against Bryan at WrestleMania. I don't think that Bryan has enough active time to carry SmackDown left, but I do think that he's somebody that can be used to help bring up the people that will carry SmackDown once Bryan retires from in-ring competition.
Yeah, all right. I could see that. But I could also see that having Bryan in the main event right now gives him even more of a rub when he does go back down. It's like recharging the battery before you go give somebody else some energy, you know?
No, I agree. I understand where you're coming from that. All right, our opening contest was an 8-man tag team match as the Street Profits, Rey Mysterio, and Dominic Mysterio take on the Alpha Academy and the SmackDown Tag Team Champions Robert Roode and Dolph Ziggler. In the end, Montez Ford catches Robert Roode with the cash out, his frog splash, hitting a 180 version of it where he turned in midair in order to get the pinfall at 12 minutes and 49 seconds. I'm almost saying this is your SmackDown Tag Team title match at WrestleMania right here, except not in an 8-man tag, obviously, but in a 4-team tag match. I definitely think that the tag team division on SmackDown is a lot deeper than the one on Raw, but let's be realistic here, Tony. They stopped giving a fuck about the tag team divisions a long time ago.
Yeah, and you know what happened? So did we.
Overall, do you think we see a four-way at WrestleMania, or do you think that they go with the straight-up 2-versus-2 rematch for the Street Profits against Roode and Ziggler?
I think we're going to get a multi-man match.
The only way we don't get the 14 tag is if they bring back the Andre, because then they'll need bodies for the Andre. All right, well, Tony's working on his pastrami still. We see the first announcement of the Hall of Fame class of 2021, and it's Molly Holly, Tony.
Yeah, you know what was cute? Well, I don't know if it happened on Friday, but tonight we saw who announced it and, like, you know, who got to tell her. And it was, you know, Hurricane Holmes on a look like a podcast that I've never seen, The Bump.
The Bump.
Yes. Right. And he cried. I just thought that was so sweet. Like, aw, I don't know. I thought it was amazing.
Well, they were travel partners for a couple of years back when she was Mighty Molly.
Yeah, of course. And I'm aware of all that. It's just very, very nice to see that with something that we don't really deem all that valuable. Like, we've kind of been jaded to the Hall of Fame. They still value this as a big deal. It's just nice to see. It really just makes it really enjoyable.
And I'm going to catch heat for this. I don't care. Molly Holly is 50 years old, and Molly could still get it.
Not catching heat from me.
America. All right. Seth Rollins interferes in the Cesaro-Murphy rematch at about the 3-minute mark and proceeds to curb stomp Cesaro not once but twice. As Seth Rollins is leaving ringside, he is confronted backstage as he comes through the curtain by Shinsuke Nakamura, which poses a problem for me, Tony. Because while I really, really want to see Rollins and Nakamura, I think Rollins-Cesaro is a better match. And I'm hoping that Cesaro gets the opportunity for the big singles match at WrestleMania.
Oh, I'm almost positive that's what we're going for. Yeah, this is a stalling tactic.
Do you think that this is going to set up Rollins versus Nakamura at Fastlane?
Yeah, and I don't see why not. I mean, that sounds great.
I'm here for it.
Yeah.
Or as the kids today would say, I stand.
You're a little bit behind on that one.
I'm more hip replacement than hip, Tony, to steal an old Jerry Lawler joke. All right, moving forward. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn once again have a confrontation. This sets up something a little bit later on in the show that I thought was interesting, specifically when Sami came out to interrupt the open challenge by Big E for the Intercontinental title. I genuinely thought that they might be about to put the title back on Sami in order to set up a one-on-one with him and Kevin at Mania, which I would have been perfectly okay with. I know that we've seen it before in the WWE. We've seen it before pretty much everywhere else they've been at the same time. But the matches are never disappointing.
Right.
The KO show sets up the aforementioned Sasha and Bianca versus Tamina and Natalya match. I really don't feel the need to add anything to this here. Sasha's definitely coming off more heelish in the build to this, which is why I made the comment that I made while we were discussing that match. And I think that the return tag team title match at Fastlane is just an opportunity for Sasha to turn full heel and attack Bianca after they lose once again.
Right.
Big E returns from his injury suffered and calls out Apollo Crews, threatening to, quote, go Old Testament on him. Which, if you watch the Big E documentary, you know that his father was a preacher, and that means something to E. A fired up Big E is then not answered by Apollo Crews, so E decides to issue an open challenge. Baron Corbin comes out to accept it, but before he can, Sami Zayn rushes past Corbin, saying this is the perfect way to end his documentary, and he accepts. Corbin tells Sami that he was about to accept, and Sami's response is, yeah, well, you didn't, so it's my match, which is just peak Sami Zayn.
Yeah, and thank God.
8 minutes and 12 seconds later, it is a big ending, and Big E retains the title. Post-match, Apollo Crews attacks Big E through the crowd, coming through the television screens, technically, and hits Big E from behind before laying him out with a pair of angle slams. He then brings the ring steps into the ring and hits E in the shoulder once again with him, sending E out to the floor. Apollo sets the ring steps up in the middle of the ring and ascends, standing on top of them, holding up the Intercontinental title as the scene fades to black. All right, so two-part question here. One, what are your predictions for the Big E Apollo Crews match on Sunday? Two, do you think we actually see Apollo pull off the upset?
I would only say yes if I saw Big E going somewhere upward, and now's not the time for that. So I think this is just going to be another notch in Big E's belt.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see Big E as your SmackDown co-main eventer for SummerSlam. Just because of the work that he's put in lately and the fact that he has himself in this phenomenal of a shape as he has, and the crowd support that's been seemingly welling up, specifically paired with the 24 documentary that he got recently as well. I like the new Apollo. I think the accent needs to go because it's horrendously forced.
Yeah. And, I mean, we've
apparently
seen him without it, you know.
Apparently, Apollo watched Coming to America and thought, this could work. I'm glad that Apollo is getting an opportunity because I genuinely think that Apollo is one of the most underrated guys on the SmackDown roster.
Mm-hmm.
But I do agree that I don't think the opportunity to give him the Intercontinental Championship is at hand right now because, A, Big E has better things to move forward to in the future, and it's not time for him to do that yet. And B, there's no real other baby faces set up to challenge Apollo should Apollo beat E for the title. You could say maybe a Kevin Owens, but Kevin's kind of distracted in his own little world right now with Sammy and trying to get back at Roman Reigns after what happened at the Rumble.
Yeah. Yeah, I really think that this is just another person for Big E to beat, which is fine. They're going to have a good match, so it's not like anyone's going to get hurt by it.
I gave SmackDown a 7.5, Tony. I know you didn't get a chance to watch it, but overall, what do you think of the creative direction over on the Blue Brand right now?
Well, I mean, I don't want to repeat myself too much, but basically, I think that they're doing great. I think that they had a lot of things set in motion, which makes everything else easier. When you have good characters, you have strong performances, and you have a good product, everything else is easy. You really just say, hey, it's like handing a cast an amazing script. Like, hey, just do your thing. Do what you got to do. That's the Blue Brand. Red Brand, not so much.
See, I think that that's the advantage of SmackDown only being 2 hours as well, is it's more streamlined, so they don't feel the need to, like, try to cram as much into the show. For example,
I don't know, man. I think it's just a more focused product. And, yeah, the timing does have a lot to do with that.
For example, this whole Bad Bunny situation from tonight's episode of Raw. I know we promised not to talk too much about the 24/7 title, and we're not going to too much. But here's what we are going to discuss about this. What the fuck was the point? To give the 24/7 title a rub? Really?
Do you want me to answer that?
You don't have to. It kind of answers itself, doesn't it?
You know, I have mixed feelings about Bad Bunny. I think that he's a true fan. I think that he's having the time of his life. I think that he respects the product, and that I'm almost positive it wasn't his idea to win the title. And also, how much sanctity does that title have? So this segment didn't really bother me. He wasn't going to have a match. Yes, somebody could have rolled him up, but whatever. I think what he was trying to do was respect the fans, and I think that not everybody's going to take it that way, which is fine. I don't know. It's a 24/7 title. I really, like, it doesn't bother me in the least. But as I said before, this is all just a way to get to the inevitable tag team match that's happening at Mania that I called months ago.
But to be fair, though, I will say I do appreciate Bunny's willingness to get physically involved, specifically the guitar shot. I mean, granted, it was to the back, but at the same time, we actually saw some physical involvement where Bad Bunny was on the receiving end rather than on the delivering end tonight. So he's taking the time to understand the nuance of the craft and actually sold pretty well when he got hit with the guitar, too.
Yeah, and if you're a fan of wrestling and you get an opportunity to be a part of it on a grand scale with the WWE, regardless of celebrity, it's a big deal, you know? Like, if either you or I became some hotshot, you know, writer or reporter or whatever, still given an opportunity to be on WWE television, I'm pretty sure we would chomp at the bit. Like, no fucking way. You know? So, yeah.
All right, I saw that you missed the opening segment, but they recapped it enough that I think you probably got the gist.
Well, I watched it while driving. Jeremy covered it for me. And something happened in the reporting where basically it got deleted. But I saw the promo. There was nothing important that happened there. So I really didn't miss anything.
I was kind of intrigued by Sheamus attacking Lashley at the end of the opening segment here. And if I didn't think that a triple threat match was a viable possibility on SmackDown, I wouldn't put it past them to do one on Raw between Lashley, Sheamus, and Drew McIntyre at Mania.
You know what I find funny? Oh, go ahead.
You could have made Sheamus versus McIntyre at Fastlane a number one contenders match and then either had it go to a no contest because neither one could answer the 10 count, or Lashley gets involved and beats the shit out of both of them.
Yeah, well, I think for some reason, I mean, when you read reports and hear that, like, that they were impressed with Sheamus versus Drew, it really gives you the impression that they don't know what we know. And that kind of bothers, like, shouldn't you know what you have? Because that everyone knew it was going to be amazing. Everyone knew it was going to kick all kinds of ass. And the common factor here is Sheamus. Like, he's just good. So when you think about tonight's main event, I mean, I don't know what you think yet, but I thought it was great. I thought it was amazing. And these fools are beating each other's asses. Now, a triple threat between the two, I mean, that just sounds like pain.
I'm almost saying that the triple threat match here would be more appealing than the triple threat match from SmackDown, because you could have three big bulls in Sheamus, McIntyre, and Lashley. A, it's a match that we've never seen before, because fans of other wrestling have actually seen McIntyre versus Lashley before. It's main evented a Bound for Glory show in TNA before. I know your opinion on TNA. We don't need to rehash that again, but it has main evented a pay-per-view in another promotion. Whereas the triple threat with Lashley added. Go ahead, Tony.
What's a TNA?
The triple threat with Sheamus added would add a new wrinkle to that and be an opportunity to improve upon the already established chemistry that McIntyre and Lashley have.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm down for either one. The more that Sheamus does what he's doing, I think the more that the management or whoever the hell is in charge is going to realize that he kind of deserves it. And I don't think anybody will be upset. And you get the idea that two triple threats in the main event is kind of a cool thing, you know, like maybe one can close out each night on WrestleMania. And if you're going to do it any year, like, might as well do it now.
Yeah, I think there's an opportunity to establish multiple main eventers coming out of WrestleMania going forward into the rest of your calendar year. Or the launch of your next calendar year, I guess, depending on how you look at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's like you want the traditional inside of me wants that whole one-on-one, two bulls going at it for the ultimate prize, Drew McIntyre earning what he feels he shouldn't have lost. But I don't know, man. Sheamus has proven himself, and I mean, look at tonight's match. Like, Lashley's proven himself too, just by getting the belt. Like, he's like, all right, I'm going to have this belt. I'm going to freaking show you why I should have gotten this years ago. Dude is more athletic, more vicious, more just full of vitriol, just like angry in the best possible way. It's great to watch.
I honestly think that Lashley found himself an impact. I think that being his original run with the WWE did not go the way that he intended. And that's when he left to go do MMA. And then when he finally decided to get back into wrestling, he found himself once again an impact, and it's carried over to him moving back to the WWE, specifically once he got away from the Lana storyline.
The Lana storyline.
I would make the argument that MVP has single-handedly saved Bobby Lashley's career in the WWE.
Because
MVP,
MVP. I mean,
MVP rehabilitated Lashley.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, like, if you're looking at it from a kayfabe perspective, then sure. MVP helped,
but put in the work.
Yeah, but not only that, they've given him trust. They've trusted the process, and they're allowing him to show his, you know, how good he can be. And I think I said it tonight in the Raw report. This is probably the best Lashley match in WWE. I can't think of another one that was this good. Again, I have a horrible memory with regards to matches. That's why I let you handle that. But I can't. Nothing stands out.
He had a banger.
Except for
he had a banger with. Apologies, everybody. There's a little bit of a delay in the connection between myself and Tony. He had a banger with Riddle on Raw a couple of months ago.
Yeah. And I mean, Riddle's consistent, and I think that, yeah, that makes sense. But I just, this one just had a weight to it. It had a, you know, one of those matches that I think we've talked about this before, that kind of make you sit up a little bit, kind of make you, at least me, wish I wasn't doing the report so I could enjoy it. I thought it was great. I thought the main event was awesome.
I felt kind of bad for Lashley's counterparts inside of the Hurt Business, however. You mentioned the AJ Styles and Omos challenging Kofi and Xavier for the Raw Tag Team titles at WrestleMania. Well, in order for that to happen, the Raw Tag Team champions going into tonight's episode of Raw were Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander. They had a really good match with Kofi and Xavier, and I don't think anybody thought it was going to be anything other than really good, because those four have an amazing chemistry together, as they've proven time and time again. But it goes to what you said in the report here, and I'm going to quote a very wise man at this moment. While I have zero complaints about the match, it was stellar, I find the transition to Kofi and Woods as champions a bit of a ploy for Mania. I didn't see Cedric and Shelton as too bad of a team, and they looked good donning either side of Lashley. I suppose the somewhat apathetic shoulder shrug I gave after the title change is also a sign of just how important they've made the tag team titles over the past year or so. We kind of talked about the tag team title scene a little bit earlier here, but more specifically for me in this regard, I think Cedric and Shelton got short-sighted to set up the matchup with Omos and Styles at WrestleMania for Kofi and Xavier.
Oh, they definitely did, and that's really unfortunate because I'm not interested in that match. I mean, I don't think there's going to be anything that impresses me to the point where I'm going to be blown away by Omos in a match, certainly not at WrestleMania. And it just screams like they did this simply for that WrestleMania match. When Cedric and Shelton they've been trying. I will say, you know, they did a video package before the match just touting them as this amazing team. And I'm like, okay, that's eye-rolling. Like, chill out. But at the same time, they were trying. They are a part of a stable. They've worked together pretty well. They showed a monkey flip into a spine buster that I thought was pretty sick tonight. And it just got so deflated, you know. And nothing against Kofi and Woods. They're great. But, like, we've seen this before. And basically what you're saying is that Kofi and Woods have more star power, I guess you could say, than the Hurt Business. And I just think over the past year or so, that's not necessarily true. Another slight aside is, like, MVP just showed no, like, apparently that didn't bother him. So that kind of bothered me.
Was MVP even at ringside for this match? Because I don't recall seeing him.
No, he wasn't. He was with Lashley, which could be explained, like, oh, it's my champion. I'm getting ready for the main event. But he had a promo afterwards, and he spoke about how upset he was with Drew McIntyre's Sheamus's words. But other than that, no, not really. So
maybe that could be something going. Maybe that could be something going forward. But I don't like the idea of that because I do think that Bobby Lashley having a couple of goons and Cedric and Shelton works for him, even though he doesn't necessarily need them. There's somebody that could take an ass whooping for Lashley and his set in order to build up a babyface challenger towards Lashley's title.
Yeah, I just really, I don't know why they, I think it was just a lack of foresight, but at the end of the day, it's very blatant. It's like, no, we think that, that Woods and Kofi are the much better, team to go to WrestleMania. So, I mean, I guess.
Well, I think it's also the whole potential heel-heel pairing of AJ Styles and Omos, but, like, I get the idea behind wanting to give AJ Styles the tag team title match here because the tag titles are the only belts that Styles hasn't held yet to keep him from being a Grand Slam champion. And while it's a scripted sport and everything, there is something that makes you feel pretty good about your accomplishments when you have that distinction of being a Grand Slam champion. That being said, this is Wrestle Freaking Mania, and we're putting AJ Styles in a tag team match with a Greenhorn as his partner.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I don't know that he's going to impress me so much that I'm just going to be like, oh, yeah, this is exactly what they should have done.
I agree. I think that it's a waste of AJ Styles at WrestleMania, if I'm being blatantly honest with you.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure how many WrestleManias AJ Styles has left, but when I think about matches that I'd like to see AJ Styles have at WrestleMania, I can 100% guarantee you that teaming with Omos is not one of the ones that I'm interested in. Because I don't know if you heard this or not. Do you know what the original rumor that I had heard was for Styles at Mania?
What?
The original rumor that I had heard for Styles at Mania was Riddle for the U.S. title. And while I don't think AJ needs to be the United States champion again, those two would tear shit up in a singles match at Mania given some time together. And especially if you have Riddle win that match, could you imagine what that would do for Riddle's credibility?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'd be great. And I think that match itself would be awesome. But I think they're going to give it to Ali. I think they're going to allow him to win. I think that it's going to be a horrible story, but I think that that's what they're trying to go for.
Shall we?
I really thought
the
they were
going to
pull the trigger
title?
Tonight, to be honest with you. I thought they were going to pull the trigger tonight. I really did.
Well, since you brought it up, let's go ahead and segue right into that match. As Riddle retains the United States title, technically after some blown interference by Dominik Dijakovic, I refuse to call him by his... Okay, T-bar or T-bag if you're Kofi, because apparently Kofi thinks he's funny. Note to that, Kofi thinks Kofi's funny. Most of the rest of us don't.
He has small glimpses of good humor, but it just doesn't always land well.
I will admit, the segment backstage with Riddle, Kofi, and Xavier made me chuckle at the end when Riddle suggested that they all get stallions. Scooters and ride off into the sunset. That did make me chuckle.
Yeah.
But the match itself actually sees a couple of really impressive moments. That swinging neckbreaker off of the apron to the floor. Why? Like, why?
I think Ali's trying to prove himself.
It looked cool, don't get me wrong, but Jesus, why?
Oh, yeah, he went full bore for that bad boy. And Riddle was like, all right, bro, I'm down.
And then as soon as Riddle laid it, you could see that look on his face like, fuck, that was a mistake.
Yeah. Yeah, that was great.
In the end, though, as I said, T-Bar has the referee accidentally distracted when Ali is able to catch an O'Connor roll, which momentarily hesitates the referee from making the three count. And then Riddle, in an impressive display of strength, powers Ali straight up out of the O'Connor roll right into the bro Derek for the pinfall.
Yeah, I knew it was going to be a new match. I knew it. And I knew if given the time, they'd pull out something that was really good. And they did. I thought Ali was going to take it. I wasn't, like, mad that he didn't. I just think that you've been berating this team that's been letting you down for months now. When is the boot going to drop? When are we going to get you just snapping or them snapping, you know? And I think the perfect thing to do, well, not the perfect thing to do, but I thought like maybe giving him the belt tonight would be his way of saying like, see, I told you, this is exactly what I mean, blah, 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 blah. They didn't do it. And like I said, I'm not upset. I just, that story,
I'm a little
way more than Riddle. Than Riddle doing whatever the hell he's been doing.
I'm not going to lie, Tony. I was a little upset.
Yeah. I can understand that.
But to be fair, I've been invested in Ali on this show for years, so that shouldn't be a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
The kid has it. Like,
yep. If there's one good thing to come out of Retribution, it's that he's proven he has all of it. The promos, the distinct difference between what we saw and what we're seeing, the wrestling skills, like it's all there. And I think a lot of people before this didn't know that existed. They knew he was a good hand. They knew he was a strong performer. They did not know that he had what he has in him and what he's been showing us.
There is a tangible credibility that comes from the ability to connect to an audience. And Ali has shown the ability to do that either as a babyface through the Show the Light videos, which were really popular over on SmackDown, or now as a heel with his tirade against the legendary society of the WWE, that if you weren't a relic of the past, then you're not part of the future, which he's 100% right to a lot of fans, too. Like the, I don't know if you actually got a chance to see it. I might have sent it to you. The promo that he cut on Talking Smack was fire. or not Talking Smack, on Raw Talk, excuse me.
Yeah,
I don't know if
you've
had a chance. I'll have to send it to you then. I know you don't get a ton of free time, but it's well worth going out of your way to watch.
Yeah.
McIntyre and Miz in a singles match opened the show. WWE champion 2.5 weeks ago, getting beat in the opening match on the show the last 2 weeks. Welcome back to the mid-card, Miz. You know what concerns me about the match? You know what concerns me about the match with Bad Bunny and Damian Priest between Miz and Morrison at Mania? Is I honestly think Miz and Morrison could do more with this win than Damian Priest could.
Yeah, but you know what's going to happen. This is for the celebrity, and I'm all for it. Fuck it.
This is for the ESPN moment of Bad Bunny hitting Morrison with a top rope splash to get the pinfall.
Yeah.
And hopefully a better splash than Snoop Dogg hit on Dynamite a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, Miz had his little run, but yeah, I mean, when you look at the matches he's had over the last couple of weeks, he's basically just been getting his ass handed to him.
Repeatedly. Like, tonight he was treated as an afterthought, specifically being that McIntyre hit the Claymore, and then instead of finishing with the Claymore like he usually does, he decides to put Miz in the full Nelson in order to send a message to Bobby Lashley.
Yep.
All right, we already talked about the Bad Bunny backstage stuff with R-Truth. All right, let's get this over with. Shane and Braun. Tony,
we're
going to
talk
about
that, aren't we?
They used fucking slime, Tony.
Okay, look. possibly in a stronger with a stronger performer or with something that made a little bit of sense and with a better connection between the two characters, this might work. Maybe. It's definitely not working at all. No one believes it. There's no connection between Braun and Shane ever. We are to believe that Shane is part of management. I know this is a WWE where management isn't something you could trust always, but we've seen him in recent weeks go above Adam Pearce, making him look pretty useless and making matches that he deems somewhat fair and right and just. And then he's just looking at Braun and he's like, that's your employee, first of all. And he's saying, you're an idiot. You're a dumbass. And he's going the whole Big Show route of which way did he go, which was not funny then. And it's not funny now. Like, Braun, look at him standing in the ring saying he was bullied as a kid. Even if that's true, because I'm sure there's some truth to that, even if it is, who the fuck is going to believe that and have any type of sympathy for him? Nobody. No one. No one is going to sympathize with Braun Strowman, the character, at all. And that's not going to help. Now they're going this whole rich versus dumb, you know, thing. Or Shane, in Shane's mind, how do you, like, he swore he landed on the best catchphrase / t-shirt slogan ever in saying Braun versus, or Brain versus Braun, or should I say Braun. Thank you for that clarification, Shane. Thank you so much. And lastly, the one redeemable quality of a Shane McMahon WrestleMania match is an elbow off the top to the table and or the leap of faith. And he already gave us that tonight. So what can I possibly clamor for with this match? We have Braun Strowman, who has lifted trucks and fucking ripped ambulances and just been unnecessarily strong. And he's knocked out by Shane McMahon and his little bunny punches. And yes, slime. It's like they got a 2-for-1 with the black shit that comes out of Randy Orton's mouth and the green shit that he found in a bucket under the ring. One could assume he put it there because, you know, he is smart. This is Shane McMahon. He's got the brain. So he put it there knowing damn well Braun Strowman was going to go to the ring and call him out, apparently, because he has that much foresight. But, like, where did the hopscotch thing come from? Like, why was that even a thing? They spent money on that. And it was only up to 8. Look, I'm not a hopscotch guy. That's not my thing. But I've seen enough crooked squares on a sidewalk to know that it doesn't stop at 8. So I'm completely thrown off by this entire storyline. It's like they said we want Braun versus Shane McMahon. Someone wrote down Brain versus Braun with a question mark, and they just went from there. Horrible.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Show's over.
Fucking idiot.
Because I ain't fucking topping that.
And let me tell you guys, that was not planned, all right? I thought I was going to just roll off the tongue, but I just kept getting more and more upset as I was talking. This is just stupid. I mean, you got Shane McMahon shouting stupid while punching a green-covered Braun? No. This storyline, Shane, is stupid.
Here's my biggest issue. This works when Braun's doing the bullying. You want to root for David versus Goliath.
But
don't
what if Goliath was bullied?
Don't nobody give a fuck if Goliath is the good guy? And good is used loosely when it comes to Strowman. My thoughts on him are no secret. Second of all, why would we care about anything that this match is going to do at WrestleMania? Because you know what's going to happen? You remember what Kevin Owens said he wanted to do last year? He wanted to jump off the pirate ship last year. Well, guess who's going to jump off the fucking pirate ship, Tony? I'll give you a clue. His last name is McMahon.
I hope Owens runs in, tosses Shane, and then jumps off on his own.
Karma be thy name.
That would be, I would pop for that.
Third, and most importantly, are we fucking 12 again? Slime? Really? It's turned into the Miz there for a second. Now, McIntyre's going to come put me in the... Thanks, Jomo. You are the Jomo to my Miz.
Mm-hmm. Better hair.
I mean, I have more facial hair than Miz does, but that's beside the point. If that means I get Maurice out of the deal, I'm all for it. Canada. All right, moving forward. Women's tag team action, because apparently they remembered that women's tag teams are still a thing in the WWE this month. And it's Women's History Month, Tony. That's why. It's actually Women's Herstory, but whatever. Dana and Mandy pick up the win when Dana pins Lana over Lana and Naomi. Tony, this completely fucked your fantasy wrestling points.
I don't even... Naomi. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But that's not the only thing that it just bothered. Yeah, this was not good, in my opinion, because I've read some comments recently that say it was actually pretty good, or they didn't do too bad, shit like that.
I think that there's a level of expectation when it comes to certain women's matches in the company, specifically those involving people such as Nia, Lana, Tamina, Dana. Anyone whose name ends with an except for Sasha or Bianca. How many goddamn names end in an in the WWE? Where's the creativity there? Well played.
Thanks.
All right. So nothing else to add about the match, though?
Oh, yeah. I could talk. I could say something. No, it was, look. This is how I feel. Mandy and Dana, Mandy Rose has grown exponentially. Dana Brooke, not so much. But them together as a team, I feel like they write down the moves they want to do, and then they go out and they do them one at a time. And in their head, they're saying, okay, this is the next one. Okay, this is the next one. All right, now let's get this one in. Because they're not putting together a match. They're putting together a string of moves, and it just comes off very obvious. Some wrestlers, a lot of wrestlers, do that. But there was a comment that said AEW does the same thing, and you rated a 7 out of 10. You have a quality show with subpar wrestling, depending upon how well the stories are being told. And I don't disagree with that person either. My term for it is indie-rific, where essentially, rather than trying to put together a cohesive story or something that grows as you watch it, instead you're putting together a string of moves littered with high spots. Now, Mandy and Dana don't have high spots. They just have a string of moves. And it's really, really obvious, especially when you're in the ring with someone like Lana, because she's also doing the same thing. So it looks like a middle school dance where neither one really knows what they're doing, but they're trying. Now, that wouldn't be so bad by itself, with the exception of the fact that I completely despise the Lana character. What makes me sad is that Naomi's trapped in all of this. What makes me mad is that Nia Jax was on commentary. So this was just a bad combination of things that did not please me at all.
All right, so I'm going to quote a really smart person here. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
First, Dana and Mandy, as much as they've grown as performers, still wrestle like characters in a video game, going through a list of moves with no semblance of reason. Basically, they are N64-ing it up, Tony.
Yeah.
It is no mercy come to life. People out there, put some respect on the good goddamn name of No Mercy for the N64. Best wrestling video game ever.
Amazing.
Okay, I'm going to take an issue with one of the things that you posted in this, though. Specifically, Asuka's interruption, because you had an issue that it was out of character for Asuka. I disagree. I think it was completely in character for Asuka. While normally Asuka wouldn't interrupt her peers having a match, Asuka was seeing red at the sight of Shayna Baszler, and especially the fact that Shayna was talking shit about what she did to Asuka 2 weeks prior when she kicked her tooth out. So Asuka came down there to fuck a bitch up.
I just think that she would have waited for the match. And we saw the match, and that was amazing. That made sense. This whole interruption, not caring about anybody else, being A, the women's champion, and B, the former friend of Charlotte, where apparently Asuka was super hyped to support other women and other women wrestlers, and now it just, I understand the idea of seeing red, but seeing red means you're going to beat her ass as soon as you get to the arena. You're not going to wait till she's on commentary sitting next to Nia Jax and come out and interrupt the match and stand at the ramp and let Shayna come to her. It didn't ring true to me. It didn't ring as Asuka the performer.
That's where I had the issue here. That's where I had the disconnect. Why would Shayna go to Asuka? Shayna's always been a bully, but she's never been one to have to bring the fight to somebody when they want the fight brought to them. Shayna's always been one to take advantage of a situation. Look at what she did to Becky when she made her debut on the main roster, going after Becky when Becky wasn't ready and then biting her.
But, I mean, the positive was when they did have the match, the Shayna versus Asuka, it made me want more because, man, that was too short. I get why it was. Asuka's pissed. But the whole viciousness of, like, you know, driving her in. And I want to give a little bit of credit to the referee, who some people would say, like, why would the referee stop that? Like, they don't ever stop things like that, blah, blah, blah. But the way that the ref handled it was like, what are you trying to do? Like, are you trying to killer? Like, what are you doing? And it rang a little more true to me for some reason. It made me feel like the referee's job is to care, and it is to protect the performers. So at that moment, I'm like, hey, this guy really gives a shit about Shayna, even though she's kind of a bitch. Like that just came off as, like, more realistic than something I've seen before in quite some time, to be honest with you.
Let's talk about that match specifically here, because that 3 minute or so match, however long it wasn't a very long match at all. But that three minute little interaction that those two had there made me more hyped for Asuka versus Shayna at WrestleMania than anything they've done to set up Asuka versus Charlotte.
Right. And I won't say that it repaired the damage that has been done to Asuka, because I really don't think it has. But it reminded you that there's a vicious monster inside that woman.
Basically, don't piss her off. or she will fuck your shit up.
She's going to curb stomp you into the ring corner. Man, she was mad.
All right, so we're going to talk about this match for exactly how long it happened. You ready, Tony?
All right.
Damian Priest versus Jackson Ryker. Broken Arrow lands at the start of the match with the fallaway Falcon Arrow Slam. Priest hooks Ryker, hit the lights. 1, 2, 3. I think I took longer to describe what happened than the match actually took.
Yeah, probably. Good riddance.
Okay, so I know there are a lot of people that have issues with Jackson Ryker over the whole thing that came up with regards to his political beliefs. I don't care what somebody believes politically as long as they're a decent person. And we've talked about this on the show before. So many people are too concerned with being red or blue that they stopped being decent a long time ago. This is creative telling you we have nothing for you when you go out there and you get trucked in 32 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
It's a universal truth that you made the wrong decision, Jackson. Post-match, Elias tries to stand up for Jackson Ryker and gets punched in the face by Bad Bunny.
Yeah, this is setting up the tag team match for Mania, and I'm cool with it.
You know what the problem is, though, is while I appreciate that it's setting up the tag team match between Bunny and Priest against Miz and Morrison, you're kind of scrap-heaping Elias along the way, aren't you?
I mean, Elias is already scrapped, so I really don't care. And they're transitioning. They're moving from that storyline to this one. It's a bad transition. WWE's not good with transitions, but they're moving forward with that. I will. The couple of things that I enjoyed about this was The Miz protecting Bad Bunny with a guitar shot. As a wrestler, you would think he'd go all in. But The Miz was a celebrity. You know, like, he kind of gets it. He gets that Bad Bunny's, you know, not a wrestler. He's not used to getting guitar shots on the back, even if it is a fake guitar. And then I want to give credit to Bad Bunny, who, after getting attacked, showed fear. You know, how many celebrities do we see toughen up and like, oh, I'm going to get you, Miz. Bad Bunny was like, yo, Priest, I was so scared, bro. Like, he, like, I don't know. It was very, very little, but it just, I was like, all right, he kind of gets it. He gets, like, he's supposed to be, this isn't his world. This is not his element, and he just brought himself into it, and he might be a little bit in over his head. I don't know. It was such a small moment, but that was a character choice, and we've seen so many celebrities just man up, and we just kind of look at them like, dude, don't, just stop.
Okay, I'm going to actually compare this to something that just happened on AEW, and I know you said you don't like to make the comparison here.
But I try not to, because if we did, this would be a very different podcast.
Well, this particular instance, the WWE got it right, AEW got it wrong. Bad Bunny actually registering the fear and the nervousness of what had just happened to him compared to Shaquille O'Neal disappearing from a fucking ambulance after a table spot.
I've been very, very vocal about my dislike for that entire storyline, including Jade and her promos mostly. But, yeah, not a fan of all that. So, yeah, I can agree with that.
To be fair, and I've said this in other places too, Jade Cargill has negative charisma.
Yeah, she actually makes me less funny.
That's difficult to do, Tony. You're a funny man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have my moments.
I'm just funny looking.
Guys, Harry's a stud. He's lying to you.
I appreciate you covering for me, but we all know that's not true. By the way, I'm hearing reports that instead of at Fastlane, the Shane versus Braun match is going to happen on Nickelodeon.
Yep, that happened, guys, on this podcast.
Speaking of things that are happening at Fastlane, intergender confrontation Alexa Bliss and Randy Orton. This is clearly the setup for the return of the Fiend, right?
I mean, I don't know, man. They've been milking this return for a while. Yeah, this is definitely not Stacy Keibler versus the RKO. This is not. This is a little different.
To be fair, though, he did RKO Alexa a couple of weeks back.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I mean, all credit to Alexa for being a champ, man, and an amazing performance, beautiful. But eventually, someone's gonna have to do something other than puke up black shit.
I stand by what I said before. It should have been Randy Orton versus Papa Shango.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe we'll have a slime match in the near future. Maybe they have like a surplus of slime that they have to get rid of.
I take that back. Tony's not as funny as he thinks he is.
Oh, that's not a joke. That's 100% real.
Oh, okay, then quit putting that out into the universe before somebody in creative hears this.
They do listen to us. I firmly believe that.
Oh, 100%, because we've seen too much of our shit happen for them not to. What did that asshole from 411 say this week? You won't believe it, man.
You know what? Maybe they'll pull a retribution and hire me so that I can destroy them from within.
Okay, that was funny.
I'm down.
Jackass. Oh, I actually have a kind of funny jackass story. My buddy works for a local school district. He also plays in a band. It's kind of like a part-time gig. And when he was at one of the school board meetings, the leader of the school board looked at him because they were something that he had claiming that he was misrepresenting the board. And Sean just had this smirk on his face. And the leader of the school board looked at him and said, "Don't you smile at me, jackass." And the entire time on his next set, it was nothing but Happy Gilmore quotes. Jackass.
Perfect.
I got involved too. My favorite quote from the entire movie: "The price is wrong, bitch."
Man, that is. If you haven't said that once in your life after a moment of ownership, then you haven't lived yet.
Overall rating for tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw?
I believe I wanted to give it a 6.75, but 411 doesn't like numbers like that, so it rounded it up to 6.8. We had some good wrestling tonight, and I think that helped carry the show. We didn't have a lot of matches. I think they usually have like 9, and I think tonight was 7. But the matches that we had, with the exception of a couple, were really good, I think. And that helped to make WWE more digestible, a little bit more palatable. So it wasn't as bad as recent weeks. I haven't, either that or I'm in a slightly better mood than usual, but tonight wasn't so rough.
You were looking forward to that pastrami sandwich.
It's possible. It is. This place is great.
Somewhere Jimmy C is smiling, Tony.
Oh, I bet. He loves when
and
I
also
get food.
And also wondering if you got the hookup to send him some all the way out here in Ohio.
He would love that, I'm sure.
All right. I'm going to go a little bit higher than you did. I gave it a 7.5. But for the exact same reason, and you know I tend to skew more on the side of in-ring content over entertainment content. And the fact of the matter is that there were 4 matches tonight on Raw. The tag team title match, the U.S. title match, the main event, and Asuka's inner badassery coming out once again for the first time in a long time, that had me invested, had me involved, and had me genuinely caring about the outcome of those particular matches. They threw that away with the tag team title match by inserting AJ and Omos into the tag team title picture, but I do think we're going to get more out of Riddle and Ali, like you mentioned. I hope this is just the beginning with Sheamus and Lashley, because those two beat the fuck out of each other for like 20 minutes, and it was awesome. And I do think that Asuka and Shayna has a viable possibility because they have something legitimate to build off of that they can go down this road with Asuka and Shayna that they've not done before. I don't know that Asuka and Shayna have ever had a pay-per-view match against each other.
Well, this one's going to be a tooth on a pole match, I'm sure.
Quit giving them ideas.
Yes.
Favorite match or moment?
Yeah, they can have a tooth on a pole match and call it like the molar opposites or something. It'll be great.
That's our show, folks. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week here on.
Did you say that? Who's the MVP?
Yeah. No. Favorite match or moment. We'll save MVP for last.
I enjoyed. Ooh, this is a tough one. They had really good matches tonight. I enjoyed Lashley versus Sheamus. I thought it was a solid main event. I thought that they kicked each other's ass, and it made me want more. And I think it almost assuredly cemented Sheamus in the main event at WrestleMania, if it didn't before.
I'm going to more specifically say Sheamus rather than both of them together, just because of the fact that, well, the favorite match was definitely, I guess I just gave away my MVP there, but specifically the Sheamus and Lashley match and the fact that they were able to hang toe-to-toe with each other for 25 minutes, just that, like I said, beating the dog shit out of each other and kept it entertaining for the entirety of the time that they had. Like, you know how you've mentioned before that WWE matches tend to follow a formula? There was no formula here. This was just them beating the fuck out of each other for 20 minutes.
It was beautiful. The shoulder at the ring post, the fucking spear in the middle of the air, the ability to break that, you know, 10 beats of the Valkyrie. Like, they just, they had, Lashley is motivated as hell right now.
And more to the point, too, the non-cliche of getting McIntyre involved during the match. They didn't go to the old cliche. They
yep.
turned a wrestling trope on its head.
So easy, so simple, so effective.
Do I even need to ask your least favorite match or moment? Can we just say slime and move on?
Yep.
Yep. Who's your MVP tonight, Tony?
Bad Bunny. I said it.
Luka Galuba, Luka Galuba. I don't know what he's saying.
I don't even think he knows what he's saying.
Sounds
like he's telling
sure.
a drunk, a story drunken in Spanish. That's what it sounds like every song.
I'll just pretend I'm Booker T and stand there with my arms crossed and get paid
Perfect.
Millions to do so.
Well, you're winning already.
Sucker!
Can't wait
till
he debuts in AEW.
Oh, Lord. but then who's going to be on the pre-shows with Charlie?
Probably Mark Henry.
No, because I think Henry's actually going to AEW. Because him and Show are close.
Yep.
All right, Tony, fast lane predictions. Women's Tag Team title match, Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax versus Sasha and Bianca.
Shayna and Nia.
With a post-match beatdown by Sasha?
I don't know. I don't know if we'll have a beatdown. I don't know if we need one.
Sasha's been leaning heel in all of the build towards this match here. I just see it as the writing's on the wall for this. Not to mention, I think Sasha's more comfortable as a heel anyways.
I didn't say there wouldn't be a heel turn. I said there wouldn't be a beatdown.
Big E versus Apollo Crews for the Intercontinental title. Excuse me.
Big E will hold on to the belt for a little longer. Probably have himself a nice little WrestleMania.
See, I think if any champion's going to end up in a multi-man match at Mania, it's probably going to be E. And I wouldn't be surprised for a Intercontinental title ladder match at Mania. Because they seem to love doing ladder matches at Mania, despite the fact that there's no real need to do so.
Right. Yeah. I think they try to break the monotony of the one-on-ones and whatnot. But As long as Big E wins that, I wouldn't mind.
Braun Strowman versus Shane. I don't know who the winner is, but I can tell you that the loser is all the people that actually sit down to watch it.
Yeah. Wait, that's happening at Fastlane?
Yeah, that's what I thought, too, because I had heard that this was a rumored Mania match. So my guess is they're probably going to do something stupid like Falls Count Anywhere, hence the boat at Raymond James Stadium at WrestleMania.
So it's official?
Yes.
Oh, God, these guys suck. Okay. Yeah, I think it's going to be a no contest.
Shane wins crookedly. Don't be surprised to see an evil referee, because that seems to be the McMahon go-to. Alexa versus Randy. This is a no contest to me because, again, I think the Fiend returns here and we set up a Firefly Funhouse for WrestleMania.
I think Alexa Bliss wins with a Twisted Bliss off the top.
Where does the volunteer line for that start? Just out of curiosity.
Oh, it's long.
And led by a freaking punk rock singer. What the f- Anyway. McIntyre versus Sheamus in what I do think should have been a number one contenders match rather than outright announcing McIntyre versus Lashley for WrestleMania.
Well, if it was a number one contendership, then we wouldn't be able to get a triple threat, I think. I mean, we would, but it would be bad writing because you don't do that and then throw shoehorn somebody in. So I'm cool with this. I think Sheamus is going to win. I think that that's going to be what elevates him to get into the main event, even though he doesn't need any elevation. Because if Drew wins, you kind of put a little stank on Sheamus that doesn't necessarily need to be there if they're going to go the route of the triple threat, which I think they will.
Well, specifically when it comes to Sheamus losing this match here, I think you can't in any way, shape, or form put him into the Mania match because he will have lost to both McIntyre and Lashley within a 7-day span.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going for. Like, you're kind of putting a little bit of a stench on him that doesn't bode well for a main event, for a WrestleMania match. It's almost screaming that he's going to take the pin.
Yeah, I do think that we get a Sheamus victory here in order to set up Sheamus being added to the title picture here, just to break up the monotony of the McIntyre versus Lashley singles match that people would have seen elsewhere.
Yeah. Weird. I didn't know they wrestled elsewhere.
Poor Impact. They actually had some good shit that you missed, Tony.
Yeah, I've heard.
But not all of it was complete garbage. A lot of it was, but not all of it.
Well, according to Jeremy, they're actually doing really well right now, but I barely have enough room for AEW, and I'm considering doing a Lucha Underground watch because I have fallen in complete love with Rey Fénix. Holy shit.
Yeah, I think you would like Lucha Underground, and it's available for free, too.
Yeah, I'm considering doing a rewatch and writing about it. I just have to find time. Oh, we're open inside for 25% capacity right now. So I'm still busy. I'm actually going back to the restaurant right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, I heard what sounded like transportational operations over in that area. So I'm not surprised to hear that you're heading back to the bar.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap this up real quick then. Roman Reigns versus Daniel Bryan for the Universal Championship. Edge is obviously going to be the guest enforcer here. This is too big of a spot for Jey Uso, with all due respect to main event Jey Uso.
Man, I don't know if it's that obvious. I don't know. Like, it is obvious, but I don't know. I think Jey might win.
All right, so here's the thing with that. Could you run something where Uso gets, like, a disqualification victory, like Bryan realizes that Edge has it out for him and would rather go with the devil that he knows in Uso rather than the devil that he doesn't in Edge? But then you could have Uso get bumped during the match at Fastlane and Edge comes in as the secondary enforcer.
Sure, Harry.
Don't you yell at me. You just tried to book a match called Molar Opposites, Tony.
You don't smell the money on that? Oh, man.
You know who would greatly appreciate that?
Baker would clamor at that.
I was just about to make that joke, you son of a bitch. Great minds and all that. Reigns is retaining, right?
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised to see, like, Reigns piss Edge off and Edge goes to spear Roman and hits Bryan instead, because that could set you up for Edge and Bryan down the road. But I do
think
that Roman walks out of Fastlane with the title.
Yeah.
Where can people find you online, Tony?
411mania.com in the wrestling section, Mondays and Wednesday nights. I also have a Twitter, TonyAcero411. And, I have random thoughts and musings over there.
You can also find him in person at Frank's, a barbecue restaurant kind of-ish.
We sell burgers.
Where the hell?
But, yeah.
Where the hell is Frank's located? What's the actual city?
Bellflower, California.
In addition, if you didn't know, Tony's Batman.
Yeah, it's true.
Did it arrive safely, though? Everything okay?
Yes, it's beautiful. I'm trying to figure out a place to put it. Where it's visually apparent every day.
I'm glad that you like it, man.
Yep, appreciate it.
No problem. It's no cake from Rick, but it was the least I could do.
Good old Rick. Miss that guy.
We got to bring him on for WrestleMania this year, I think.
Too busy having kids.
You can tell Rick's Catholic. They don't believe in birth control.
No, they do not.
And that's a fucking shoot. I'm at ATV the Eagle on all of the social media places where you may try to find me, Twitter, Yahoo, Facebook, Instagram. I don't really use Instagram, but I'm on there. But make sure you guys check out the Chair Shot group on Facebook as well. You can see all of the latest postings on the Chair Shot webpage, as well as interact with all of your favorite writers and or contributors towards the website. A lot of the 411 guys are there as well, including Tony and guys like Jeremy Lambert and stuff like that. So you can find all of us on the Chair Shot Facebook group. In addition, if you're interested, the kickoff presents just the tip-off. The Madness is back. The NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament 2021 Part 1 now available on Get Amazon Music /W2M Network or by going to any Alexa-enabled device and saying play W2M Network on Amazon Music. We got to talk to Greg about getting that set up for the Chair Shot Radio Network, Tony. Very convenient.
Sure.
So while Tony goes through a tunnel, for the hopefully returning soon co-hostess with the mostest, Miss Liz Puglisi, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero, I am your host. I am the voice of reason. My name is Harry Broadhurst. You have been listening to The Reaction, a presentation of the Chairshot Radio Network, online at thechairshot.com. We'll talk to you guys next Monday when we break down the Fastlane pay-per-view and start setting the official road to WrestleMania 2021 here on the Chairshot Radio Network.
Deuces, bitches.
I want my music back so I can close these shows properly. Until then, you just get the commercial. Bye, everyone.
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.